This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
8:13 now on this beautiful Wednesday morning. Ronald Serpas joins us, professor, practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of the Washington State Police and the Nashville City Police. We always like to pick his brain as it relates to crime and so forth. How you doing, Chief?
I'm good, Tommy, and you well?
I am well, thank you. I wanted to start with this before we get to second lines and everything else, because I was watching the news mm-hmm. about the trial with the undocumented immigrant that is accused of killing mm-hmm. Lake and Riley. And I got to thinking about the mindset of, and I know you do a lot of research and hell, your PhD and all that stuff, but when it comes to the mindset of somebody that would be maybe inclined to commit criminal activity if they're basically in a country anonymously, right, where they don't know, nobody knows who they are, where they came from. Apparently, the detectives were able to track this down. But I just wonder about if that, as we talk about immigration and trying to keep the politics out of this, just from a security standpoint, I don't want to fearmonger. But watching this, it suddenly struck me that, you know what, maybe somebody would maybe think that they are bulletproof or responsible to no one if they thought they were in a country anonymously where they could never be tracked down, no record, no this, no that. Do you have any thoughts on that? Is there any research on that kind of thing?
Well, I'm not so sure about research, but I mean, common sense always has the most important impact on the way people see and think and learn about crime. Remember, we've talked crimes known by your friends, family, and neighbors, not by the news or not by data. I don't know that that's not a bad observation. I mean, if you sneak into somebody else's home and they don't know that you're in your home and then they start stealing your stuff, you start wondering, where did all my stuff go? Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be, I think, clear. I think the fact that you take another human being's life is just reprehensible and disgusting. You know, a lot of times people suggest that someone who can do that to such a young, beautiful soul, you know, even the animal kingdom doesn't kill indiscriminately. It kills to eat. I mean, just to kill another human being, to learn that he was flown around the country on the federal government's dime by testimony of his brother, you know, those are the kind of things that I think really piss people off.
And I think, I guess, you know, and again, I try not to fear monger, and I don't want to hate on anybody, and I try to be fair and everything, but I was just thinking about the psychology of that, where if you are someplace where they don't know you, there's no history of you, it would be, you think it'd be relatively hard to track you down. If not, maybe people would be inclined to give in to their worst impulses. I don't know. I just thought about that.
Well, you know, it's just as you said that, it did occur to me this. People who choose that kind of motivated offender lifestyle have already given up on any consequence relationship to following the rules. Maybe that's part of what I should have said. Like, if you've made up your mind that you're going to violate a whole bunch of rules, then why do you stop violating rules, right? Whether it's breaking into a country or whether it's breaking into a business, you've already made the decision to be criminal. You know you're criminal. You know you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Whatever the circumstance, cutting ahead of the line in immigration or breaking into somebody's business, you've already made a decision to be criminal. And oftentimes, they just tend to escalate as they continue to find ways to get away with stuff and not get caught. That's something I would say my experience tells me as a chief and an officer for 34 years.
Kind of like when somebody shows you who they are, believe them almost?
Yeah, take them for their word.
Yeah.
Here's one thing we found out with DNA testing, Tommy. You know, a long time ago, we used to think that criminals were incredibly specialized. Now, over these many decades of DNA testing, what we're finding out is criminals may not be so specialized. They might have a crime they like more than others, but they tend to be incredibly general. You find people with DNA left on the scenes of burglaries at churches that are wanted for robberies, wanted for murders, running for sexual assaults. You find them in stolen cars, and you find out they're wanted for robberies or murders or sexual assaults. So the fact that we see this escalation of people choosing whatever crimes available as opposed to being a specialist only speaks a little bit to your question, too. It's just a continuation and acceleration of a decision to be criminal.
So along those lines, since I started with this, how big of a problem? Because you know, and again, I don't want to bring the politics into this, but when it comes to immigration, it would seem to me that, and I've said this before, that a country without borders is a park. It's not really a country, right? Because you can come and go like you please, no admission, no this, no that. Just have a good time and then leave whenever you're ready or avail yourself of whatever you want. From a law enforcement standpoint and among you and your fellow professionals, how big of a concern is illegal immigration as it relates to criminal activity in a country?
Well, I think to start with your first observation, you're right. The United States government has spent, what, $200 billion to help Ukraine enforce its border? Isn't that what we're doing? It was an incursion by a warring faction. But it's a border. To your point, it's a border. Without borders, you don't have a nation state. You have a park. I think what happens is many of the people from a police point of view, speaking only from my own experience, many people who enter any country illegally are probably not part of the criminal system, but the ones who do enter, they aggravate the public more. And then you get these silly comments that, well, more Americans commit crimes than immigrants. Well, what's the population of Americans to the population of immigrants? I mean, it's kind of a not particularly well thought out argument to say, well, more Americans commit crimes than illegal immigrants. Well, first off, being illegal is a crime. Right. And then from there, new crimes just compound that. But from a policing point of view, if you're living under the radar, to your first question, it's very difficult to know all the things that might have been done until you finally catch them. And usually by then they've done quite a few things.
And I'm really not trying to hate on anybody. That's not it at all. Mm-hmm. But I do think it is an important thing that doesn't often get discussed. And I think sometimes people will say we're discriminating against this or discriminating against that. I don't think that's the case at all. I just think, how far off is the analogy that you lock your front door when you leave?
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think we've come to accept that as a way of living a long time ago, and that's fine. It is what it is. People need to feel safe. But I always think about crime in the context of victims first. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of being a cop, right? I know there's a lot of people who have been accused by the political process of thinking of the criminal first. The Constitution protects the criminal. The 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 14th Amendment demands that a criminal defendant has the right to defend themselves. The government has no right to hide information from them, no matter who they are. And I always have been victim-centric. Like, okay, every crime means that somebody got hurt, somebody lost something, somebody got scared, somebody got shot, somebody got killed. So, you know, if it's wrong to be thinking victim first, then I'm going to be in the crowd of wrong, because to me it's always victim first.
All right, Chief, let me take a break. We'll talk about second lines when we come back. Ronald Surpass, our guest professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief. And, you know, I was just thinking about that, Lakin Riley, the young lady that was murdered, and I just think if I were her parent, what would I feel as though, I would definitely feel as though the government definitely failed and let her down in so many different ways. 821 traffic now, WWL. All right, 827, Tommy Tucker, WWL, taking our deep dive into crime every Wednesday morning, or as we do every Wednesday morning, with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, head of several police departments in the nation, including NOPD. Chief, let's talk about second lines and what happened. You know, I grew up in Algiers. We didn't have a lot of second lines there, and it's something that, you know, with which I'm not quite really familiar, to tell you the truth. You were the head of the department. You got God knows how many years on the street as an NOPD officer. Tell me about this thing with second lines and people that are saying, well, they had a shooting at second lines. Maybe it's not safe. This has been going on for a long, long time, right?
Oh, absolutely. I did my first second line work as a motorcycle officer in 1987. It's a cultural artifact in New Orleans that's brilliant, engaging, fun, wonderful for the community. And all the way back to 1987, there has been instances where incredibly selfish, criminally oriented people have decided to take away everyone else's fun. Mm-hmm. The problem with second lines is not that they're a wonderful experience. The problem is there's people hanging around on the exterior who may at times, like Sunday, decide to shoot at somebody and not care who else they may hit. You know, 30 years ago, it wasn't quite that way. It was usually 30 years ago, one bullet, one gun, one victim. Very sad. Today, and over the last many years, these young men who have no care for anyone else see a target, shoot into a crowd, not caring if they... Wow, what's that?
What's what?
Oh, something's in the background I hear. So now what they do is they will shoot, Tommy, into a crowd without any regard for anyone else, and then blame the government that they don't trust for the reason they had to retaliate on their own behalf. Isn't that kind of incongruent? So that's the problem.
Chief, I would think if you're going to try to stop something like this, if you go back, and I don't know who did this, I don't know if anybody knows yet, but chances are this is not their first offense, right?
Most likely never it's their first offense, and sometimes they'll do it right in front of the police officers. If you remember, more than once on Bourbon Street, even when I was chief, someone would see an angry person they're mad at and shoot them standing almost next to a police officer. So when they decide they're going to do that, they really don't care, which is a representation that they stopped caring about anybody else a long time ago.
And that makes me work back to, well, if you want to prevent this, instead of saying no second lines, maybe you go back and see who the shooter is and find out why they're not in jail in the first place. That makes sense?
Well, generally, we've come to learn if people who have committed crimes remain responsible for their crimes, they tend to be less likely to do it again because they're incarcerated for serious crimes. Many of these kids have committed very serious crimes. Don't be confused, Tommy. A 19-year-old doesn't pick up a gun and decide to shoot in the crowd, generally, unless they've been involved in a lot of other things.
Yeah, you don't break bad all of a sudden. You don't go from the honor roll shooting into a crowd.
Not usually. No, not usually.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate your time. Good luck with whatever it is that's going on in the background there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Jake Madison, host of Locked On Pelicans, about the Pels right now. Time for WWL First News.